It's the holidays, Johnny. What better thing to do to celebrate than to listen to another episode of Talk About That?
Oh, just gather with your friends. Well, don't gather, first of all. Don't do it.
Please don't gather.
They're telling people not to gather. What do you think of all that?
I know so many people in the hospital right now.
Yeah.
And so many things happen. It's crazy. My family is going to gather, but I have a deck, you know, so we're keeping all the doors open. We're wearing masks inside. And then we'll serve food there, and I'm putting tables on the deck, and I have patio heaters. And so once we're out in the open air, I feel much better about it. So we're trying to keep especially our elderly safe, you know. So
I was thinking the other day, it's the perfect time to, if you don't care for your family. Like if, right. if you're just like, because you can be like, call your mother-in-law, look, we so want you here, but Dr. Fauci said no.
I thought you were going the other way. Like, it's a perfect time to bring in all the people you don't like to get
no,
sick.
No, no.
That's
mean,
really
like,
dark.
It's but, a great, like, built-in excuse. Yeah. Like, man, we were so looking forward to all the kids just running around the house and breaking all my stuff. But Dr. Fauci, what a jerk.
Oh, what are we going to do? Can't stand that guy.
Fauci said no. Okay. That would be who sang that? Who was Mercy said no? Who sang that? Phillips Craig and no.
Mercy said
no. Was it Casting Crowns?
Okay, Mercy said no. Wow, no, you're going way back.
Mercy said no.
It was the father-son duo. It was...
I know who you're talking about.
Jeffrey in the name, didn't it?
Yeah. It was like...
With Geoffrey. It had like G-O-E.
I can't remember.
What was it called?
Fauci said no. I'm not going to let you go.
Fauci said no.
I'm not going to let you go.
Well, anyway. They had another song called, didn't they have a song called Mercy Came Running or something? Or was that?
Yeah, that was, no, that was Phillips Craig and Dean, I believe. Okay. We're getting all the CCM fans.
Or as you call them, three him.
That's right. Phillips Craig and Dean were three him.
He's always said, guys, we're Scarlet Thread. Do the whole thing you used to
no,
do.
No, I'm not doing
you'd
it.
Be like,
so.
We picked, you know, we wanted to call ourselves some other things.
Well, we did. We had three different names. Yeah. Five Smooth Stones was our first name.
Five Smooth Stones.
We found out there were a bunch of those.
Yeah.
So we changed to 11th Hour. And we made a couple of CDs under that name, 11th Hour. And then we found like 12 11th Hours.
Yeah.
So we changed to Scarlet Thread, did our last CD under that name, and then we found a bunch of those too. So we changed to Carmen. But that was.
We used to say we wanted to call ourselves Amy Grant.
Amy Grant.
Turns out that was already taken.
Then Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Yeah, and then you'd say
to him.
To
that's what
him,
we were going to be.
We're
gonna just a duo.
Yeah. Or
for the money.
That's right.
The number four, and then
for him, not a sponsor, by the way.
So, no.
Yeah.
There is a site online where you buy, I don't know how to say this delicately. I hear it on Sports Talk Radio. I listen to Sports Talk Radio a lot.
Yeah.
There's a site that sells ED medication. And they call it, it's called forhims.com.
Oh, wow.
And I'm convinced it's because For Him still owns the website. And they wouldn't give it up no matter what because they're like, we're not giving up our website. They probably offered him $1 million. Look, we have this ED medication.
If an ED company wanted JohnnyW.com for $1 million.
100%.
Guys, if you're listening, if there happens to be a weird medication called Johnny W out there,
yeah,
Johnny is open
to
negotiating for his likeness, his website.
I'll do the commercials. I don't care.
I'm Johnny W.
I'll sit in a bathtub across from 4 feet away from another person. It's the weirdest.
Those are the weirdest things. Like,
it is.
I hate to be graphic.
You never know when that moment's going to strike. It's like, I think. This seems oddly.
If the moment
planned.
Strikes, you're in separate bathtubs.
Yeah,
I don't know if you're aware of this.
It's not going to work out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was odd. But whenever I see that for hymns, I'm like, hymns.
Yeah.
Hymns, it doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, when I listen to Sports Talk Radio, it's always the hair loss guy in Nashville, you know?
They know their audience, man. They really do.
He's one of the DJs, and he was like, I think he's on one of the billboards, too, around here. Truly, he has a head of hair now, and he didn't before. He's like, and it's so easy. All I do is every day on my lunch break from 12 to 2 go in for a very easy treatment. I'm like, who in the world can go every day on their lunch break?
Well, it's not every day still, is it?
It's like at least several days a week. Yeah. No, it's like a laser treatment.
Oh, my gosh.
If you don't go in, it all just falls out. So that's how...
How do they laser hair in? That doesn't seem right.
I think the treatment like stimulates the follicles or whatever.
Oh, I see.
So like the deal is, though, I don't want hair so badly that I can't live my life. Like... Like, I can't do
that. But wait till you see on the other side, John. You're going to... food tastes better. It's going to be...
I'm like...
The air is cleaner.
Maybe if I was single or something, perhaps, but...
Well, you've kind of established yourself as what you are, and you're married for many years. It's a thing. It's like, I think if I was... If you were out there and you were losing your hair...
Ballgame, yeah.
Because they've proven that, like, people make more money if they have hair. Well, if attractive people in general make more money. I think they've proven that. Which, that makes sense. That's just a dumb caveman thing that never went away, probably. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I do feel like in life, when I look at my successful friends, most of them have hair.
Yeah.
Like I have, but I'm just going to defy that, Johnny. I'm going to be the... I'm trying to think of someone who's
Lex
successful.
Lex Luthor?
I don't want to go quite that...
He's pretty successful.
...diabolical.
Yeah. You know, you got Dr. X.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody's... I'm trying to...
Captain Picard?
You can think of a lot of...
Those are both the same person,
like,
really.
Millionaire rich people.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I want to be...
But maybe they were driven, though. Maybe that was the thing, is like, I got to... This idea has to work. My hair's falling out. Like, I got to figure something out here.
You know, I don't know. It does... I will say, not having the looks, you know? It does equip me probably to not worry about that as much and just put my head down and go to work. My bald head down.
Who was the guy? So Chris Whittle, who Whittle Communications, who was the benefactor for the scholarship that you went to school under, right?
Yes.
So you got a full ride scholarship to UT Knoxville.
I did.
Whittle Communications, who he was a giant, he was a billionaire. I guess he was a billionaire. I don't know if he's multimillionaire at least. So
yeah,
he was a guy who was that. He was a guy who wore the same outfit every day.
Yep.
Like Jeff Goldblum's character in The Fly.
Yep.
He was a scientist, basically, or I don't know what his field was.
Communications. So he started Channel One. Did you ever have Channel One when you were in school?
In school, no. But I went to like private Christian school, and then I was homeschooled my last 2 years. So I have a really weird scholastic journey. But all that said, I knew of Channel One because I had a lot of friends in public school, and I know about it. But and then people thought it was going to be like a New World Order too. That was the thing. Like even back then, there were conspiracy theories that I heard circulated in Christian school about Channel One being a way that they get ideas in your head.
Yeah,
they brainwash the kids because it's the TV and that's how they get you.
Yeah.
Little did we know it would be Facebook. we invited it all in.
And that church now has a Facebook page.
Yeah.
I was a private school. We had Channel One. I think it's, by the way, where Lisa Lean got her start.
Oh, okay.
And we watched it. And it was so cool to us. News for kids, you know.
Right.
Yeah, he started that. And then he also began with his company. He started sort of some of the early charter school concepts, you know, so charter schools comes a lot out of him. I actually have a book about him. I've never read it. It's called Empire Undone.
He paid for your school, John. You didn't read his book?
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. So apparently everything fell apart because the name of the book is Empire Undone.
Yeah.
But I need to read that.
It's about his own empire.
Yeah. Someone wrote about him and how all the stuff kind of fell. I'm sure he's doing fine, you know, but.
Man, now he wears one outfit every day, but it's just because that's...
It's an orange jumpsuit.
That's the outfit he has.
No, but yeah, he did. He would wear a bow tie. He was a bow tie guy.
Oh, man.
He'd wear a bow tie.
Not a clip-on.
No.
Well, that's a little complicated. That goes away from the whole idea of
the thing. It might have been a clip-on. I don't know. You can have clip-on.
Because it's like if you're trying to save time by not worrying about... Because his whole mindset, right, was that... Because I remember reading an article about it.
Yep.
He said, we waste all this time worrying about something that doesn't matter. So I just picked like khakis, a dress shirt...
And a blue blazer.
And a blue blazer bow tie.
And bow tie.
And I wear that every day. And I think Steve Jobs was that way.
Yeah.
And he always had the black mock turtle and the jeans.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I can think the older I get, I wouldn't call it vanity. There's just trying to stop the slow descent into, you know, just being so hideous, you know.
Right.
Like, or as we call it, getting old. But so there are things I do now, probably. Again, I think just about the time I take with clippers to my head is so much more than I spent most of my life. Because, you know, you got to get the whole thing, Johnny. It's a big head.
Nobody helps you.
No.
Even in the back, you're just trusting that.
I now shave the back of my own neck. because I don't have hair anymore to worry about it. You know, right. like getting that line the same. So used yeah. to have to have Laura come shave up to that line, make sure it wasn't crooked.
That's true.
Because I grow hair in the back of my neck like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
Like it's like another beard back
yeah.
there.
So, yeah. But, I've seen it. It is. It gets rough.
A wombat pelt, some used to
it
say.
It is something back there. Well, I will say this too. You rescued me a couple of days ago. Was it yesterday or 2 days ago?
I don't remember. A couple of days.
You came because I ran out of gas.
You called. I answered. And I came to your rescue.
John D. said no. I have a GMC Terrain. If you drive a GMC Terrain, maybe you know this, but when it says low fuel, when your car says low fuel, how long do you have, John? You have 2 gallons of gas left probably, right?
Yeah, but I have, again, mine has the, yours does too. My Acura has the digital thing. It'll tell you the mileage.
Mine does too.
And it'll be, yeah, I can go all the way down to 0 miles.
Mine gets to 40, and it says low fuel. Ding, ding, ding. And it even has the thing that comes up and says, find nearest gas stations. And it'll even like, it's a lot of bells and whistles. You have between 2 and 3 miles.
That's crazy.
To get to a gas station.
I mean,
I've run out of gas 3 times in this car.
Wow.
3 times. We pushed it one time to a gas station. Curry was with me, and we were really close to a gas station, so we tried to push it. And then we got to the last part, and it was uphill, and I was like, oh, no. And some guys got out and helped us. It was really embarrassing. But also just like, hey, what are you going to do? We'd already started pushing. And so it's not happening. Like
you know what, guys out there, sometimes when you've already started pushing.
Sometimes you think you've got 40 miles, but the devil says no.
he's going to let you
wait.
And it's uphill. Anyway, go ahead.
So I was like, I was driving. We were going to go to lunch, and we're close to the Mount Juliet exit, which is you're off that exit. And I was like, I realized it's sputtering because I was like, we'll get gas because I still have like 43 miles left, it said. And it started sputtering. And literally, as we broke down on the side of the road, the low gas thing came on. Ding, ding, ding. As we coasted to a stop.
Something's wrong with your car, John.
Right.
It's not how
it's not supposed to work. So it's totally calibrated wrong. And so I don't know if that's just a GMC thing, but it's a bummer. So anyway, I called AAA because I have AAA for many, many years because I used to drive bomb cars.
Yeah.
Most of my life that you knew me,
yes,
I was driving what my family called disposable cars.
Right.
You buy it for $800, you drive it for a year, you take it to the junkyard, you get another one.
As was I from
the class. Yeah. That's just how we live.
Yeah.
And you just hope that you didn't inherit a gigantic mess of problems. And usually they're good for about 6 months to a year. And you just go get another one. You're like, all righty. Look, hey, we got a blue one now. We don't even know the models. You just go, look, a green one. A green piece of garbage. But we're driving like newer cars. Not new cars. I don't buy new cars. But you drive a newer car, you feel like it should be dependable. Mm-hmm. But no. Sometimes, John, it doesn't work out. But anyway, so I've had AAA forever because it's just AAA was my lifeblood because I've always said I need them 3 or 4 times a year most of my life. So I just have kept it up.
Right.
Plus, I travel now, so I don't leave Curry hanging.
Right.
So she's on the membership. So if I'm ever on the road, she breaks down, I want her to be able to like get help. So I don't ever use it anymore because my cars are more dependable. But I call them yesterday, and it's like all automated. It was like a million questions, and like half of them were about COVID. And I was like, I go, fuel, because they were like, what do you need? And so I said, fuel, because they'll bring you 2 gallons of gas.
That's part fuel!
Yeah. And they were like, I didn't get that. And I was like, just connect me to a person. Have you or your loved ones been exposed to COVID? And I was like, no, I didn't get that. No. And then it's just bad. So finally I get to the end of it, and they go, they'll be there in 87 minutes. And we're half a mile from the exit. And I'm like, I'm calling John. So I call you.
Triple J, baby.
Triple J. So I used to think AAA was people with real drinking problems. No, so I call you and you pick up, and I remember saying like, hey, I need a favor if you got a few minutes. You went, I could feel you losing patience with me.
No, I was doing it on purpose.
Okay.
That was so legit.
Because you're always doing something. You're always busy. So I never feel like, hey, let's call John. He's not. I feel like when you call me, you're like, Johnny will come. He's not got kids. He's not doing it. What's he going to be doing?
John's like, I'm sorry, I'm out on a bike ride right now.
Yeah, or sometimes I'm out of town.
I'm playing golf with some of my best friends.
These days, I can't even say I'm out of town. All my shows are getting canceled. But
I'm hanging out. I'm watching a movie. It's like, dude, you live an enchanted existence. So,
whatever.
But you chose it. Hey, listen, I chose to have kids, so it's not on you.
Anyway, so you graciously, and you got there pretty quick.
Oh yeah, I told you I'm on my way.
Yeah, did you have gas with you?
I did.
You already have like the go can.
I went to the can
because you have your mower at the house.
Yeah, I went to the can and it was about half full, and so I thought, okay, that'll be enough. So yeah, you know, but yeah, but I had to go down and turn around at the exit. That was the deal. Yeah. So.
You did it, and yeah, she started right up, thank goodness. But yeah, so John,
I couldn't tell she started. It was so loud out there with the trucks coming by.
They were not getting over a lane. They weren't abiding by that. Yeah. I was almost scared to open my door to come meet you because I was like, maybe I should just let John pour this gas. But I thought, well, that's too. I don't make him like it's a just get it. It's in the back, you know.
we're gonna keep the heat on in here.
Yeah. But yeah, so I bought you breakfast this morning. But
it ended up being
it ended up being McDonald's because you didn't want to go to Cracker Barrel because it was, you said, teaming with people, or that place is crawling. That's what you said.
It was, man. People were walking in there like, you know, I don't know if everyone's heard or not. Yeah. There's a pandemic going on.
Hmm.
So I had a cousin, by the way, who died. I didn't know him that well. He died 2 weeks ago. And
that's awful.
Family's obviously, again, he was older. My mom's family is huge. She's like the second youngest of eight.
Oh, man.
So I have cousins in their 60s kind of thing that I don't really know that well. But he had no pre-existing conditions, but he had a massive stroke because of the blood clotting things that can happen with it. And then I know another friend who's a friend from our past who's in ICU. He's, you know, not doing well. Talked to someone this morning who's one or two neighbors both have just been hospitalized. So, point being, like, yeah, I will go in a restaurant as long as it's distance and all those things. But when I just see bukus of people,
well, and you can't wait. Cracker Barrel is one of those things where they've jammed it with that store area where you can't walk, so you can't distance in there, and you can't stand still because you're now blocking an aisle of bric-a-brac for people to look at.
Yeah.
So if you just stand there and go, I'm going to pick a corner of this restaurant to distance in while I wait for my name to be called, people will like, excuse me, and they're looking for their Christmas ornament or whatever. You're in the way. You're always in the way in Cracker Barrel.
Man.
That'll preach. You ever feel like you're in the way, listener?
Yeah, and again, I do wear, it's a KN95 mask, and you were commenting on it this morning because I could speak better because it's like a duck bill kind of thing. It doesn't stick to your lips when you're talking.
Convex would be inner, concave is outer, right?
So I think concave is inward.
Okay, so it's convex? I don't know. Is it a stalactite or a stalagmite?
It's a stalagmite. So, but no, But hey, you didn't have to buy my breakfast because I brought you gas. Johnny, look.
I just felt like.
We've covered this before. Like, number one, we don't do that. We're lifelong friends.
Well, no, I just thought, well, if ever there was a time.
Yeah. But second.
And I did take some of your fuel.
But secondly.
Like, your gas went into my car.
When it comes to who bails the other one out.
Right.
You're probably still way ahead. Like, because there's stuff, because you're handy. So many times over the years, I'm like, dude, I gotta, and you're like, I'll be right there with my toolbox, you know,
that's
kind of thing.
I've changed brakes on your car.
I can't think of the last time you did anything like that.
No.
But.
It's been a while.
Well, you did a lot in the first, like, 10 years.
That's true.
And then we all had enough money finally to hire plumbers and stuff, so.
Yeah.
But.
What you're doing now.
Speaking of, I may have to run any moment, because I now have the third backup of my septic system in the last, like, 4 weeks, and I've already had people out like crazy, lots
you
of
know,
repairs done.
These, you rich podcasting personalities.
It's so
with
true.
With your champagne problems.
Listen, I have now learned, because I've had to manually clear some blockages from the tank. Just let that sink in.
And then
don't let it sink. It sinks right into your carpet. But I'm going to tell you, I've had some experiences that I can't unsee now.
No.
And I've learned a lot. And it's not good. So, but almost, So it's not been, when I was living in the city, which was only like 3 miles down the road, we were on sewer. And this never happened, but I'm on septic. I'm in the county.
The city comes out if there's ever
But there's never, there never is, you know, because it's all, you know, flowing through.
There's infrastructure.
System.
Yeah.
Guys, we tackle the tough topics here.
We do. Like when I just never thought of like people living in a nice home and being on septic. I always grew up thinking like, if you're on a septic tank, you're out somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's just so weird to think of like people that are just outside the city limits, but they're in a nice home, but you also have to deal with this kind of stuff where you're like, I had to call a guy with a truck and he's got to come pump.
Yeah. And now they're going to have apparently the pump that's built into the tank or is in the tank may be bad. So they're going to have to like fish it out, I guess. I'm not sure. Yeah. No, I asked a plumber friend yesterday. I was like, dude, what do y'all do? He goes, well, when the tank is empty, you put on a suit and you get down in. I was like, mm-mm. I mean, he's my friend. And I legitimately said, Steve, how many times a year do you have to do that? Like, I was thinking, this is,
yeah,
and I told you, I've been on the fence about getting into plumbing as a profession, and this pushed me back to the correct side. I don't know.
No.
He was like, yeah, a couple times a year.
You
weren't
on the fence. You don't have to do anything plumbing? Have you ever done anything plumbing-wise?
Yeah.
Do you know how to do things?
I hate plumbing, but I do it. I can put, like, so this week.
Can you glue pipe and solder pipe and stuff?
No. But like this week I had to change out the cartridge in my shower faucet.
That's not anything.
Johnny, it had been in there for like 20 years, I think. Okay. And I was on the phone with my plumber friend.
Yeah.
And because it wasn't working. I couldn't, like, everything was corroded and it wouldn't come. And
that
and
is kind of, that's,
I
that's,
had to jerk on it and I was like, right. Am I going to break something?
And if it does, it's just over. Yeah. You got to go out to the street and shut it off with the curb.
He was like, no. I mean, that, like, beating on it with a mallet. Like, there's all kinds of stuff that I'm, so yes, I do stuff.
You shouldn't beat on pipes with mallets.
But yeah, I had to, he's like, what you're going to have to do, you have to loosen it.
Yeah.
So everything I do with plumbing, there's two things I don't do, Johnny. Mm. Or I do and I don't do well, or I do and I hate it the whole time I'm doing it because it takes 5 hours longer than a professional. And
right.
The first one is doors.
Yeah, doors are tough.
Doors are a pain. Like, to get a door correctly into the square, shimming of it and the moving of unscrewing the screws and putting a shim. Like, no. Or if a door handle, if it's not latching correctly, you know, within it. So anyway, I do stuff like that, but I hate doors. And part of the deal is we hung all the doors in this building, if you remember, and they're solid wood. And so I just remember for like 2 months of my life, we were trying to hang and readjust doors. So I don't like doors and door frames. The second one's plumbing.
Yeah.
Like, I'll hang a ceiling fan all day long. Well, electrical doesn't bother me, all those things.
Plumbing in a new space is a different experience where you're just like, oh, I'll glue this pipe. It's a wide open space. But when you're getting in a crawl space and there's spiders and possibly, you know, a line break where you're down and laying in mush of various descriptions.
Yeah.
That's a whole thing. That's why plumbers make the money, is because they may show up and be like, hey, I just need a new sink vanity installed. And you're like, done. That'll be $400. Or it may be, climb under my house where God knows what is down there.
Put on a hazmat suit.
And that's also about $400.
Yeah. Put on a suit and get into my septic tank.
Right. So it's like, you want to take care of it when it's all like brand new construction.
Is there like National Plumbers Day, I wonder? Because we need to honor the people doing these jobs.
Man.
Like, there is plumbers out there, man, if you're listening right
now. There was a meme that I saw the other day, and I was thinking about you when you were talking about your septic guy, because there's a septic tank company that has their septic tank pumping truck painted like the General Lee.
Wow.
And instead of 01, it says 02. It's number 2. And I'm not kidding. It says on the side of it, the Dookie Boys.
No way, Johnny.
I'll send it to you. And the name of the truck, go ahead and guess.
Hold on. I got nothing. It's
the General P.
And I was so close.
That is all true.
I was close. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
We could share that to our Twitter account because that's 100% true.
They went. Is this a Nashville thing?
Oh, I don't know. I just saw it randomly on Facebook.
That seems like something that you would have done if you ever had to start.
Right.
Because, you know, our good friend Seth owns a landscaping company, does tons of amazing work. And
right.
Johnny, you gave him his name.
Well, no. Get Motivated, he came up with. But the thing I tried to give him was, because he wanted to do some things in the fall, because he's like, yeah, business really dies off. This is early on. Now he does like Christmas lights and all kinds of things, landscaping jobs that keeps him busy all year round. But back in the day, he was like, man, it slows down. Once I get through like mulching people's leaves up for them, it's dead in October, November, December.
Right.
So I was like, you need to do a whole thing of like fall jobs. And you could say, raking care of business. And then he wouldn't do it.
But he did get motivated? I thought you gave him motivated.
No, I didn't give him get motivated.
Wow.
I don't know. I think he came up with that. Seth's very punny. He can do it.
The funniest thing you ever came up with Seth is when he had a very, very long engagement.
Yes.
And you wanted him to start a
blog about it and blog about like their experiences and purity. And it was going to be called Premarital Seth.
To this day.
Yeah, he should have done it.
That gets me. Yeah. Wow. Premarital Seth.
.com.
Hey, we actually had a couple new reviews.
Okay.
This week. They're both 5-star reviews, by the way.
That's nice.
That's good. Thank you guys for that. We ask you to do that.
We have 5-star listeners.
Yeah. And so one of them, though, asked us to talk about a topic. So I'm going to pull that up.
Is this going
to
be hard-hitting?
I thought it was a pretty good question. We've talked about some of this before, but I think, you know, he asked to go deeper. So would you mind talking and clarifying about the verse in the Bible that deals with slavery and racism in that time and how it should be read today and how people during American slavery would use it to justify slavery? Just a little bit more about that, thanks. And that's from C Comedy Podcast Fan 1. That sounds like something you made up. Did you put this in here?
No.
Okay. So, yeah. So, yeah, hey, thanks for that question. And Johnny, do you want to tackle that one, or do you?
I know that I've seen people who decide to walk away from the faith use this as one of their issues. Yeah. Like, either some semblance of this about how the Bible justifies racism, if you pick and choose verses, or if the Bible justifies sexism, chauvinism of any kind, et cetera. And so, yeah, so there are people who, you know, cherry pick certain things. And of course, there are also fundamentalists on other sides who, yeah, they did use it to justify racism. But we've talked about that before, about how, like, chattel racism is different than, or chattel slavery was different than biblical slavery, right? Right. Isn't that what you were,
yeah,
you've told me this before?
Yeah, I'm going to get to those verses, too.
I mean, there definitely was racism in the Bible, too, but if anything, like, when you think about, like, how Samaritans were being treated, like, Jesus talked about that like it was wrong. He wasn't like, yeah, and clearly we all hate the Samaritans.
Right.
He challenged those views.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. No, I think you're right. There's two things at play here. You know, one certainly is historical. So, yes, chattel-based slavery is not generally the ancient. Now, I don't want to glorify or lift up ancient slavery like it was great.
Right.
Like, you know, but it was different. I think we could at least say that. Chattel-based slavery based exclusively upon the race, or the color of your skin, which there's a lot of debate about race being a social construct. And the deal is ethnicity is very much scriptural. Mm-hmm. And some people use this idea that race is not biblical. They use it both ways to their advantage in racist and how they deal with racist ideas or the current conversation about it. So one is they say, well, obviously race is in the Bible because we see all the different nations and you can go to Tower of Babel, all those things. And the deal is ethnicity is certainly in the Bible. We don't see a real concept of black and white or brown, like race based upon the color. Mm-hmm. Of your skin. So there was certainly ethnic bias.
It's more like nationalism or
cultural bias. Yeah, you know, right. A lot of cultural bias. And
rich versus poor, for sure.
Yeah, you had all those things were at play. So, I mean, the sin of those things was certainly present. It generally was based more, though, again, upon your ethnicity, where you're from, what mm-hmm. language you speak, those kinds of things. Slavery in those times was often... historically, well, one, doctors and teachers, people like that were often household, you would call them slaves, but they were like servants.
Right.
And they their livelihood for the skill they offered was based upon what they were doing for the household. So they mm-hmm. might they would live there, and you know, they were again, I'm not trying to glorify it. I'm sure it's different places, but they were tied to this because that was how they made their living.
And more like an indentured servant.
Right. But they had wives and husbands and families and other things that would all be a part. Or they might not even live with the master's household, even though they're a slave. Or a bond servant is another way to say that. So they're bonded to that household, but that they offer a skill. They're basically being paid. You know, currency wasn't always the payment for things. Mm-hmm. So they may be serving the household in other ways, but it's a mutual relationship where there's certainly a master. Even in old English, the term master was used a lot, or lord, you mm-hmm. know.
Right.
And so it wasn't like they owned you. Even if you called them lord, it wasn't the idea. Chattel-based slavery is I own you.
Right, your property.
Right. And so understanding that sort of difference, that was a very unique to 19th century slavery, especially American slavery. So, for example, again, chattel-based slavery, you're not allowed to marry. If you are, it's not legal. So often they would have marriages that they were not recognized. And obviously there was a lot of rape and a lot of other horrible things. So the master having complete access to whatever he wants.
Right.
Obviously you have lynchings, punishment, beatings, other things that went completely unpunished because they were legal, because you were considered to be subhuman. So the way they did was they started taking a color of someone's skin and making someone subhuman out of that. That certainly is not biblical. Now, there's a lot of war between Israel and other people based upon the choices they made or the right. idolatry or all those things. But even and people really do struggle with that with God. I would encourage everyone to go watch Bible Project videos. Go to BibleProject.com and just start watching through the Old Testament. And they give a lot of great historical, I guess, application to those difficulties of the race issues between that seemingly God is endorsing, and in some cases people think God is causing that, but they kind of give context to what's happening. It's difficult to read an ancient work mm-hmm. through modern eyes and understand all the things that's going in that may not mean the same to them that it means to us. But understand that that God is not so different in the Old Testament as he is in the New. It's a lot of us understanding the dispensations and times and also the context of what that really meant, or how God was actually bringing justice through the things he was allowing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So he was not causing injustice. He was bringing justice because of child sacrificing, all kinds of abuses, things that were happening in other cultures that he was saying, this is not how it should be. But back to the idea of ancient slavery versus modern, the chattel-based slavery of I own a human, I own a person who is subhuman because of the color of their skin is very much an American thing. In 1667, I do believe is the date, this is you begin to see things in the laws. This was in Virginia and was not yet obviously a state. There's still a colony. But up to that point in Christendom, if someone was baptized,
yeah,
which meant they became part of the body of Christ. That was one of their ways of looking at that. You are now a Christian, and so much so that you're baptizing and joining us in this fellowship. That generally it was against the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church even. It was against their practices to enslave their brothers and sisters in Christ. So understand right there, there's evidence historically of mm-hmm. something different than a lot to the point of the question. Lots of people have used these passages, these Pauline passages about slaves obeying their masters, respecting their masters, as evidence to enforce chattel-based American slavery. But that is taking it completely out of historical context. We can even see that in the American colonies in 1667. Up to that moment in time, there was dissonance within their own belief systems,
yeah,
because they did not believe that you could baptize someone and they remain your slaves.
Right, because now they're your brother in Christ. You can't enslave your fellow brother.
Right, which...
So they had to make a workaround.
Yep, they had to make a workaround, which, again, but we understand that means it wasn't always that way.
Yeah.
That means that the way it became in the 1800s and the 1700s, 1800s is not the way that it was in the church before 1667. Even in the colonies, they passed a law saying you can now baptize your slaves, convert them, and also not, you can let them have spiritual freedom without granting them physical
freedom.
And
they had to make a statement, didn't they?
It was a law.
Yeah. But I'm saying, didn't you say something that made a statement in front of the church? I understand that this does not free me from my slavery.
Yep.
This only frees me spiritually. They had to say that?
Well, crazy. Or sign something. Yeah. Their confession of faith included their own, like, I'm still going to be owned by these people. It doesn't free me.
So evil, man.
So that's a complicit moment in time where, and right. people don't know those kinds of things. And so, but you know, whether or not, yes, it's a horrible atrocity that thing happened, but it also proves that it wasn't always that way. They had to, someone somewhere chose to begin making changes.
Yeah.
Right. And then you trickle down, you forget that someone made that choice, and everyone just starts thinking, oh, that's how it always is.
Yeah.
That was just natural for people to think that black people were subhuman in 1900. No, it wasn't. It may have been natural for people who are now three generations, four generations into that process, but it wasn't always natural. Someone chose that at some point. That's the danger of making big changes that you don't know how they're going to trickle down, because mm-hmm. your children's children don't know that there was a choice made. They just think this is reality. So that's why history's so important, to see the choices and see that we can still make choices today. But to to that point then, and I read it. There's an amazing book everyone should go read. It's called Reading While Black by Dr. Esau Macaulay, and I'm quoting him a lot in the book that I'm writing now. But he talks a lot about these things, and he's a theologian and just brilliant. And so he points out several things about these passages. One, he points out – let's go to Romans 13 for a second. So Romans 13 is another thing that people really struggle with in terms of obey the government or not obey the government.
Yeah.
And so it says to obey the government. But there's things embedded in that that we really, really overlook. And so I'm going to read you a little bit of it. Let every person, verse 1, be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. So, okay, people use that, for example, to 100 things. Take it into the modern rioting issues of, wait a second, you're coming against authority. So, now, mind you, if you really take it back logically, by that verse, we shouldn't have the United States of America.
Right, because we should have just stayed in England.
Right. So the rebellion. So one, there's one like place of cognitive dissonance.
I've never heard anybody say that, but that's really true.
Yeah, I mean,
like we were already in rebellion.
Yeah, like we literally.
But we always think of ourselves as the city on a hill.
Yep.
And we're the good ones, though. Yep. Everybody always thinks of themselves as the good guy in the story. That's the thing is when you really read the Bible, it forces you, and you really understand the gospel, it forces you to look at yourself as the bad guy in the story.
As the antagonist.
Yeah. And you have to go, ooh, what if I'm the bad guy here?
Yeah.
But we never want to do that.
No.
And that's a very American thing, is that we're the hero. We're the ones who everybody looks to.
Right.
And we got to be the example. And now when you start looking at like how other countries are viewing us the last few years, the last 10 years, you just go,
Well, hey, go read Alexander Hamilton by Ron Chernow, and you'll realize, just go through the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
They were having these conversations then.
We've
just forgotten about them. But the Tories or the British sympathizers who were loyal to the crown because they'd made a vow. The colonists are British citizens.
Yeah.
So it was a big deal over taxation and over an overreach of government power for them to do.
Well, and I'm glad I want to say this. I'm glad we left.
Yes, I think it was the right move.
I don't want people thinking like, Johnny thinks we should still be in the British colonies.
No, my point is, though, it's so funny how we get to pick and choose what rebellion against authority seems right to us, to your point.
Well, and it's always about who's in office, too, right? It's like people want to, I remember growing up for real, now that's not necessarily my parents, but hearing all the time, if a Republican was in office, you got to obey him, he's your president. If a Democrats in office, he might be the Antichrist.
You
start looking for evidence that he was the Antichrist. It's like, this is very suspect.
Right, because the Antichrist is definitely going to come from the United States.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Completely biblical, right? It has nothing to do with the Middle East or Israel. But anyway, so that was sarcasm. I'm sorry. I should have been less sarcastic. But I think to the current, and I'm trying to stay out of current things, but at least it plays into it. Like, You said you read a stat that like something like 50% of Republicans believe that the election was rigged. You know,
that's an insane number.
Yeah, it's a high number. And even though
all the cases have been thrown out, there's been no real evidence shown.
Yeah,
aren't they like 1 in 14?
I'd like to be clear about this. I believe in the process. And
I hope it goes through the process so that it can be proven. But it's like that when you're a conspiracy person, no evidence is the evidence to you. When you go, this is how deep it goes because there's no evidence. That just shows how good the cover-up is. It's like there's nothing that can satisfy you.
There have been multiple judges in like 4 states who have dismissed multiple suits so far. And the thing about the judicial branch of the government is even though they will say they're a conservative or a liberal judge, like they're not moved by partisan politics.
Right.
There really is a law. You know, and that they are supposed to hold to it. And so I know people are concerned about conservative justices on the Supreme Court, all those kinds of things. But often those conservative justices rule in a way the conservatives don't like.
Right.
Because they interpret the law and the and justice.
The Constitution
according to law,
is their boss.
Is supposed to be blind.
Right.
And so that they interpret it for where we are. And so, yes, when I see 10 judges have thrown out cases because, and they're happy to hear it. Bring us the evidence. And if they don't have any evidence or any proof,
or if it's just rambling, like some of these court transcripts, what Giuliani is bringing is it's rambling, it's insane. I think he's making something like $20,000 a day.
Well, and again,
to bring these cases,
to everyone to be clear, I'm not above thinking that there could be a problem in elections. What I'm above thinking is because by the way, justice is based upon not adhering to an outcome. This is so key, okay, and now we're really deep into it. One of the issues with Black Lives Matter, the organization, okay, that one of the issues I think that is clear, because I don't support the organization, but I do support the sentiment, the statement, all those things. And I think that there are a lot of good Christians who take some of the positive parts of the organization that are trying to bring awareness and all that. I'm not saying it's someone we shouldn't listen to at all. But on their website, if you go to their website, they basically say they started in response to the jury's decision in the trial of George Zimmerman after the Trayvon Martin. Right. And there's something fundamentally wrong with saying we are against an outcome. And so
not the process, the outcome.
Right. So Eric Holder, the attorney general at the time, under Barack Obama, mm-hmm. the Justice Department did a full-scale investigation. So these are two black men. Mm-hmm. In a very liberal administration, did a full-scale investigation of the judicial process. So you had a jury of both black and white people. You had all the evidence presented. What they basically came to the conclusion was there's not enough evidence under, and this is how the justice system works. You have to have evidence to prove a conviction.
Yeah.
And it's not there.
Yeah, you can't decide at the end, I didn't like the outcome, so the whole process must be broken. You can examine the process and see if it's broken.
Sure. And the process is broken in a lot of things in our justice system. Right. And I think that we're dealing with that. But Eric Holder came out and said, guys, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, and if they were looking for it, because if it was there, no one wanted to find it more.
Right.
But justice at some point says, hey, the way that reasonable doubt, the way that innocent until proven guilty, the things that protect us in the justice system in this particular case. So I'm not saying that George Zimmerman didn't do it in cold blood. I'm just saying the justice system found that there wasn't enough evidence to convict him of that. It was found by black and white people. It was followed up with by an auditing process of the Justice Department under a liberal administration who found that same thing. So the point is we can all and should mourn the death of Trayvon Martin. That's a tragedy regardless. It's a tragedy for the community. It's a tragedy for all those things. And more in the things that got them there, absolutely, that there was certainly race, I think, involved in the interaction.
Right. And let's look at whether stand your ground laws open the door for this kind of thing to happen.
Look at all of those things. But at the end of the day, that one particular case, when you say, I'm starting my organization because that outcome, though everyone is saying was done justly, is wrong. So my point of that is when we now, let's flip that script, we have a very similar thing happening that people are saying they're not, there's a chance that people may be tempted to not look at the outcome.
Well, and the fact that there's no protests in North Carolina where he won.
Right. Or in Arizona where
there's no fraud there. Why? Because he won.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Or in Arizona where as they were continuing to count the mail-in ballots, Trump was gaining because the population there was older Republicans who had mailed in their ballots and they weren't having or
military absentee, which a lot of times go his way.
Right. Justice says you have to evaluate all things the same, regardless of whether the outcome is something you desire. It's like the key to American
justice
democracy.
Is blind. Right.
Has to be. So that whole thing is what I'm saying. The same for this question about slavery. Is that people were using scripture then in American-based chattel to their advantage, and this is what Dr. McCauley, and this is the full circle, Johnny, says on Romans 13. He says that there is embedded in this something that none of us have ever been taught, that we're all skipping over. He says, and it's right here in verse 3, for rulers, now he goes into the whole thing about Roman soldiers became police during their time, because the Roman Empire became so big, they instituted soldiers who weren't even always in uniform. They were there to keep the peace, to rule. Mm-hmm. So this is not just rulers who are the kings, but this is the system of justice that he makes a much more in-depth theological and historical case than I can, because, again, he's a scholar, that basically a lot of the policing systems of the Roman Empire could be comparable to what we have today. Yeah. So there are people on the ground enforcing the law to keep the peace. So those people are not a terror, the Bible says, to good conduct, but to bad. do what is good and you will receive their approval, for he's God's servant for your good. So there's something there that when they're using verses like this in the 18, 19, 20th century, that like they're using these verses to try to get, whether it's black people or slaves or
under Jim Crow,
you obey the government no matter what happens.
Yeah.
They're leaving out the part that is directed towards the system and towards the rulers, and that is that actually these exist appointed by God to protect you. Mm-hmm. And it blatantly says, if you've done nothing wrong, you have nothing to fear. So when people who have done nothing wrong are afraid because there's harm being done to them by those rulers,
right,
then you have now...
The scripture's not... That's not what the scripture...
That's not what the scripture was saying, right? Yeah. It's being applied differently than it was intended, because it's... You're only applying it to the people you're subjugating and not to those who you're supposed to be serving as those who are in authority. I think that applies to church across the board and everything. If you have a pastor in your life, that's not the first one to serve or the first one to clean or the first one... If he feels these different places, like if he's truly appointed by God, that he may be missing the mission. It's true of our politicians. Like there's a time in life that you called these things public service,
right,
for a reason.
Well, in the same way I grew up with that, my mom was always like, don't speak bad about the man of God.
Right.
She would use that scripture and talk about like, you know, like the call of God is throughout the repentance, and we have to, and meanwhile, there might've been an abuse or something that I was pointing out. Well, this person's obviously, they're doing something anterior to what we believe.
Yeah.
But she believes so strongly in that thing of like, we don't know the anointed, we don't touch not mine anointed. That was a big thing with her.
Yeah.
So it's like, to your same point, like when you're not doing the thing that the anointed man does, like you no longer have that protection.
Right. You may be, and I don't think everybody's got to be perfect in this, but
the
God's ways lead us.
If anything, he held people to a higher standard when they took that call.
Certainly that's biblical. That you will be held as you lead. And as a leader, it's not like everything, it's these two ways of thinking. One way is, because I'm the leader, that means God appointed me, and that means what I'm doing must be right.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of the whole thought process.
Might makes right.
Right. That if God put me here, then what I'm doing must be right. As opposed to the humble leader that goes, if God allowed me to do this role, that means I need to more humbly make sure what I'm doing is right.
Yeah.
That it's being aligned with God's ways constantly. I should be the first one to be calling, to be confessing and calling attention to the things that are not, because I have a different level of accountability for those things. I think, again, let's just clear things up with the election side of that. My whole point of that conversation is I want the judges to rule. But I have a hard time believing that 10 to 15 judges across various states, across various liberal and conservative viewpoints, all are involved in some vast conspiracy. I find that hard to believe, because at some point in time now, I'm undercutting the very justice system that holds all this together.
Right.
That needs to be looked at, all those things. But I think at some point in time, I go, man... And when we don't apply the same principles to places where the candidate that we wanted to win is ahead, when we're not applying it equally across, that also violates principles of justice. And I'm not saying the Democrats and Republicans can't both do that. I'm not vilifying one or the other.
Well, that's the other thing we always do, is like, it's always our guys that would have cheated.
Right.
The other side would have cheated. Our guys would never have. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, there's no way that there's... That's the thing. When you make yourself the hero of your own story, it's a very dangerous way to live.
The reason it's dangerous is not because, like, God's against you on it. It's that God's for you and is inviting you not to live that way, because it always leads you to the wrong place.
Yeah.
Like, there's things... It's such a turn that we have to understand. Look, if the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, because they have a Supreme Court as well, and they just did... If they rule a certain way, it's like, hey, we're doing recounts.
We're certifying.
Yeah. And I'm great. Everybody should recount. That's awesome. And a lot of them already do it anyway. It's built in. Like, recount, do all those things, regardless of the outcome. Like, I have lived plenty of times in my lifetime where the president in office was not the one that I voted for.
Yeah.
Like, that's happened. And it's happened for every American citizen who's ever lived. At some point in time, it's actually kind of the beauty of all of this. And I'm not trying to wax eloquent, but... this peaceful transition of power, this tension in which we live, right, that we don't...
To not undermine the whole system just because your guy didn't win.
Right. To do that is very dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, it undercuts. So what it means is in 4 years, people may not vote next
right.
time
Voter
because they can't
yeah.
trust it. You have other people that now, no matter what happens, they're not going to adhere to the policies of the government, which is not just the president. But, like, there's going to be a whole new...
Right. The cynicism that can set in from this, where you have an obstructionist
yep.
way that you govern, which I believe in checks and balances. If we had an obstructionist, Senate and House or whatever, let's say you had somebody in power on the president's side that was being obstructed by the other side, in a way that can be good, honestly. Because I believe in checks and balances in a big way, where you just don't have somebody just be like, I'll just, when you have somebody that's just like in total, they're going to lead with.
Yeah, you rarely want the same party in the White yeah. House and in the Senate and in the House. Like, yeah. you want there
of course,
to be.
Now you have people just like writing executive orders. That's become such a thing where it's just like the president's power to just like, I'll just do what I want anyway.
And the next administration writes executive orders to reverse the first administration. Yeah, yeah immediately. Yeah.
But yeah, so in general, like the idea that we're going to have obstructionist parties in government obstructing what the president wants to do, no matter who it ends up being. That's one thing. But when you have 50% of people from one party believing in a lost cause narrative that's being pitched, almost like the end of the Civil War,
yep.
that's the dangerous part. That's when you have people who are going to try to assassinate Biden,
right.
Because they'll believe he's not justly in office.
Right.
This is crime, what he's done. And it'll be just for me to now go exact vengeance. Like, that's the kind of thing that happens when you get these conspiracy theories rolling, is nutcases happen.
Oh, and it already did, by the way. I mean, let's not forget that the militia group in Michigan that had a whole conspiracy to kidnap the governor of
right.
Michigan. They were staking out her vacation home, and you, in their minds, they think that they're doing something just
right.
because she's a radical liberal who doesn't have the right to tell them they have to wear masks or whatever that mm-hmm. they're upset about. And stoking those kinds of things is very, they're always out there, but stoking that kind of mindset to go, look, it is really okay for you to do something, for you to think that's like the American Revolution, maybe going too far.
Yeah.
Like, we need to point out, like, listen, you have to choose somewhere. This certainly, and I just made the case from Romans 13 that, yeah, when government officials are not, then, I think, and this is what Macaulay says, it's really important. He goes, look, there is a sovereignty, though. God may allow you to live under an unjust system for a season, and that there's a mystery to that sovereignty we don't know. It doesn't mean that, what it means is it's okay for you to speak truth. It's okay for you to try to, especially a democracy, to adjust the system where it should be adjusted. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to just shut up and act like that injustice is God's will because you're under a certain system. Like, you're allowed to say this is
yeah.
unjust and that needs to be adjusted. And especially with elected officials, like, you could do that. It doesn't mean that you should go kidnap the president. No, I don't think it qualifies you to do that.
Right.
But when your people are being kidnapped, I mean, like 2 million people kidnapped from Africa and forced into slavery, and under a system of justice, like, it's no wonder. I read a Frederick Douglass quote talking about how black people viewed the 4th of July in their mm-hmm. time and what an atrocity it was to them to see the fireworks and hear all of this rhetoric about freedom and justice and in a, while they're literally being subjugated to slavery. I mean, again, he was a freed slave, like, or a former slave. Actually, he may have run away. I can't remember. But, like, that, you just go there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. Different viewpoint.
The juxtaposition of those two things for someone who is being told they're not even human,
mm-hmm.
a whole human, that's got to be a hard, place to live. So, but I hope we've wrapped up that question, because I think it does all apply the same thing. Like, hey, the scriptures that have been used throughout history and American history to justify American-based slavery are most definitely taken out of context. The ones, slaves obey your masters, meant something different in their time than it does in our time. Certainly then, the traditions even of church history where we allowed ourselves to, it's funny. So slaves are subhuman, but they can be converted. I mean,
right.
like, you go down that whole pathway of how much dissonance was in all of their ways of thinking. And here's the other thing. They, a lot of them knew it at the time. And they hated it. Even once there was a lot of the founders felt that there was no choice but to have slavery,
because pragmatism, because of like who's gonna harvest the crops.
Think about the land.
The country will fall apart.
Yeah, they had just inherited, inherited is the wrong word. They just were taking over this enormous landmass and claiming it.
Yeah,
and so how are we going to possibly move this nation forward where we have stability and security and cannot be attacked by Spain tomorrow?
Yeah, you align your beliefs with this wrong thinking because you don't know another way. It's we're seeing it on a smaller scale now with Christians who won't believe in global warming or countries that won't believe in global warming. Like we pulled out, even though 99.9% of scientists believe it's happening and we have to act now. But we're so tied to the oil industry that we just align our pragmatic beliefs with, well, it can't be real because how would we live? It'll disrupt the entire global economy if we don't have oil.
Yeah, and instead of
we're just going to drill everywhere.
There's got to be a middle ground to go, hey, guys, it doesn't mean we have to kill the oil industry today.
Yeah.
And I think there's that. And there are a lot of companies who are finding a way, like, well, we could do things cleaner.
Yeah.
We can do things less disruptive to the environment. We can begin to have hybrids. We can begin to have, like, there's a middle way of, I think that's the whole point. When we say, now the Bible says slavery's okay. Like, we choose this extreme lane of a very narrow interpretation, and our minds are unopen to any sort of correction or thought process to the other side. We just decry that as liberal, radical, socialist nonsense. Right. And it's like that way of thinking is very from Proverbs. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding. I mean, that's such a key.
Only in expressing his own opinion.
But only in expressing his opinion. So, like, for any of us, liberal, for conservatives, for Christians, for non-Christians, like, that first rings true in everyone's marriage. It rings true, like, when you don't want to understand, you just want to express your opinion, it leads to all kinds of foolishness, and foolishness leads to destruction. It's just the way it works, regardless of religion or political affinity and all those things. So I think to say, look, the goal would be that I am, so, and I do, I have, I am a conservative who have much more further right conservative friends, and I'm trying to listen to them, you know, not just dismiss things that for me historically or politically don't line up because I just don't see it, because there are some points I can hear there, and possibly listening will help, because, you know, if you just dismiss everybody, the far right, dismiss the far left, and, you know, truthfully, it sounds like we're trying to get everybody to become centrists, but I don't think that's the case. I just think wisdom is found in not calling off the thought process. Don't just call off thought because I've made my decision. You're going to have to keep thinking, and that's tension. I'm going to have to keep thinking no matter what I'm thinking today.
Right, or just demonizing the other side. They're the bad guy. I'm the good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea, you know, it's just having your mind opened. I used to be afraid of having my mind opened, you know? When somebody would talk about something like the death penalty, I'd be like, well, the death penalty is what it is. I mean, this guy, if you kill somebody, I mean, you think, and then you start looking at like how broken our justice system is, and you start seeing things like the Innocence Project and people who have been in jail for 30 years for a crime they weren't even at.
Yeah.
And we can prove it now. And then you just go, how many of those are there like that who got a public defender because they're broke and they have a different justice system than I have, and now they're on death row? I'm not willing to let that that's the whole idea of our justice system, is like, it's better to set 30, you know, 100 people that are guilty free than to have one innocent person. So we have that. We have innocent people in jail. So now that we know that's happening, I can't be pro-death penalty anymore. So that's a very liberal idea to some people.
Right.
To me, it's a very sensible idea because we know the system is different than what we thought it was. So now that I have more information, I can make a more educated view that might line up as progressive or liberal to somebody, but to me, it's just common sense.
Right.
And
there are plenty of, by the way, ultra-conservative politicians in power who are anti-death penalty.
Yeah.
Who, because when they're the ones who have to give the go.
Right.
Like, it's a big thing. So it's easy. It's really easy from the cheap seats for us to be like, yeah. And it's like,
It feels like justice to us to go, he killed somebody, kill him. But when we know now that, like, okay, there's a lot of factors in play.
Yep.
There was only eyewitness testimony, which we know now, like, the longer, like, if you watch these documentaries, man, about eyewitness testimonies, the most, the most jarring to a jury. In other words, it's the most, it moves the needle the most for them if they go, it was him, and they point. And now we realize now that we know about human condition, we know about human sociology now, years and decades of this, it's the least reliable.
Yeah.
And it's the most, it moves the needle the most for the jury, and it's the least reliable. So how many people do you think have been convicted? I mean, on eyewitness testimony that are in jail right now. So when you just look at that, it just goes, it doesn't make sense to me anymore. Yes, are they on the government dole forever? Are there people that we know are guilty that have confessed or whatever that we could get off the... But there's so many people that we don't know that about that I just go, it's not worth it. So that's just an example of being a centrist and the tension that I live in because of it. Because I may hold something that might have been considered a very progressive idea 20 years ago. But I'm just going, I'm just looking at the evidence.
Yeah.
And I've modified my beliefs.
The real question is when you begin to modify your beliefs, how will people choose? I think this is important. If I choose then to go, well, Johnny's
right.
Johnny is now
you.
A complete
right. pigeonhole you.
And that I think about Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, who are politically like the worst of enemies. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, one's anti-slavery, one's pro-slavery, one's states' rights, one's big federal government, both presidents, you know, like there's so many things in their time. Like they were bitter enemies.
It's just like me and you.
It's just like us.
But then one day Adams needed gas and he was able to call.
But in their later years, after they both had left the White House, yeah, it wasn't a White House yet. But when they had left the presidency, mm-hmm. like they basically became friends, like really close friends, wrote tons of letters to each other, especially died, but by the way, on the same day.
Yeah. I remember this. You know? Yeah. They died on the same day.
You know, and at the same age, if I remember, like it almost seems like too neat.
Like a mystic connection.
But it's true. Yeah. Like they represent the country in so many ways because, you know, they both were patriots.
Right.
And they both thought of that patriotism in different ways that were right, and they debated, and their parties and their factions really warred against each other, yet they respected one another,
right.
And even developed not just friendship but I mean affection for one another over time. And they in fact both of them having sat in the chair making those big decisions, I think that there was a sense of grace or mercy. And I think you see that among presidents now. You know, it's so funny, George H. Bush became great friends with
Bill, they have foundation together
with Bill Clinton.
Yeah, they raised money for charity, yeah. Tons of different times for natural disasters.
If you read George W.'s biography of his father called 41, it's a little short book, but he writes about his dad's story. Basically, he talks about that, how there was something bigger than their politics, mm-hmm. and they came together and didn't agree on 1,000 things, but they had a real friendship. You know, and I just think, like, why is that such a foreign, like when that becomes a foreign concept, we really are in trouble to say, hey. And I know issues like slavery and issues like racism, those are difficult things. It's going to be difficult for me to be friends with somebody who is openly a white supremacist. Like, I don't know if we're going to be able to share a lot of life together, because that's going to be, and I get that, that's going to be probably
a deal breaker. Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody's deal breakers have just moved so much now. Now a deal breaker is if you don't share my viewpoints on social media or my viewpoints on whether there's a vast conspiracy.
If I want universal health care, I'm all of a sudden like a communist. I'm the enemy. I'm the enemy. Yeah. It's like, I just don't want people to go bankrupt if they get cancer.
Yeah. Or, you know, or somebody who literally, I have friends and family who truthfully, if you ask them, they can't conceive anymore of a Democrat being a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, guys, we've gotten way too narrow.
We've moved it. We've moved the bar.
You ever heard of Jimmy Carter? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, y'all know that's not how it's always been. This is a very modern mindset. But now you're saying your deal breaker comes down to a political party. And I know a lot of people will add abortion and those things as their deal breaker. But they're not seeing any nuance in the issues because they're never actually talking to somebody so they can learn what those things are about. They're just feeding whatever their own media side gives them. Or as you said today, there really is no media hardly anymore that influences. It's now social media. We are the reporters.
We are the media. So when the whole thing of like, this media conspiracy, it's like, hold on. We've got millions of media outlets now because you're a media outlet. And what you let come through, what you retweet, what you share – it affects people, and it changes the mindset of some people. It's sad, but it does.
And now even like the either liberal or conservative networks that you used to trust every word they said as almost scripture until they began to call things in this election in a way you didn't like it.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And suddenly now you abandon what has been, especially on the conservative side with Fox News, a mainstay, like the only supposedly fair and balanced way.
Right.
And when they said something you didn't like, suddenly they're now in the conspiracy.
Yeah.
Again, that's the whole point. Like, that's seeking outcomes at some point. I'm not saying they can't be in a conspiracy. I'm just saying it should at least cause you to pause and go, if I've always trusted every single word of this, which maybe you shouldn't have in the first place from either liberal or conservative media, I'm saying, but if you did, if you just bought it hook, line, and sinker,
right,
until the moment they said something that you didn't like, and suddenly now they are the devil. You know, there's a whole new conservative media company coming up. I think it's Newsmax or whatever. Like the conservatives are abandoning the one that kind of brought them to the dance a little bit just because they don't like the outcome.
My favorite Newsmax story that I saw was one that said they called the election for Biden while Trump was playing golf to ruin his round of golf. That was a real Newsmax story. Wow. That was one of the conspiracies. They just wanted to ruin his round of golf. I was like, this is news?
Yeah.
This can't be. We can't right. accept this.
Right. So, yeah, do the recounts. Count them all. Get them. If there's fraud, sniff it out. Put the investigators on it. I mean, let the judges, let the courts. I'm all about all of it. And when that process goes through, I'm going to accept its outcome.
And then you're going to take your payout from George Soros.
And I believe that the justice system can have problems. Obviously, we're talking about that a lot. It needs to be adjusted. But there is also there's also safety and abundance of counselors. What that means is there's a lot of judges, a lot of people who are lawyers on both sides, a lot that's bringing more safety to this for me, who are conservative and liberal together, right, all looking at it. And there's a lot of secretary of states of states who are both Republican and Democrat who are certifying results. There's a lot of great people who just are public servants in their counties and in their cities who aren't making
right.
anything.
They're volunteers.
Right?
Yeah.
Who are not
They're
willing.
Being sued. Some of these people are being sued that are like delegates.
Yeah.
That are supposed to be electors. And they're already like being sued before they can even cast their certified vote.
Yeah. And they're going to go cast based upon what the population voted in yeah. their county or in their state, because that's what the law says. And they're going to go cast a vote often for a candidate they don't personally like.
Right. Yeah.
But they're going to do it because they serve the people. So, again, part of me, I'm not – I know we got to keep dealing with the system. But at some point in time, I think, hey, guys, just watch yourself on either side. If God's honest truth, if this was happening in reverse – and it was the Democrats who were saying the whole thing was rigged, I would be saying identical words.
You have to let it go.
At some point in time, I go, look, guys, we're going to, you know, and if it just, I think this is the pastoral side of me. If it's just like infuriating you and you're not ever going to listen and talk about that again because we dared to mention something about centrist equity in the justice system.
They've already turned it off.
Then, guys, I'm just telling you, I love you well enough to tell you, like, I'll say it like this. If you think everyone who thinks in any way different than you do is a dangerous radical, then by definition, you are a dangerous radical. That's what dangerous radicals think. That everybody else
right.
who thinks in any, I know, it's okay to know people think differently than you, and you can think that they're wrong. But if you think it's dangerous to think differently than you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's only dangerous and radical to be the exact or any sort of minutia difference than you, then whether you realize it or not, you're in the dangerous radical
right,
mindset.
You're an extremist.
So, all right. Well, anyway, I don't know how we got there, but I think we answered all the questions today.
I think today's show was dangerously radical, like in an 80s kind of way, you know?
Yeah,
like
radical.
A cool like cartoon dog on a skateboard.
Radical. Yeah. Yeah, the kids are saying rad a little bit now again.
No.
Some of them are,
okay.
Like in the middle school and stuff.
Are they wearing parachute pants, though? Is that coming back?
No, not yet.
Oh, it needs
They're
to.
Not tight rolling jeans yet either.
Parachute pants are great because it was like, is somebody following me? You didn't know for sure. You'd shoom, shoom, shoom. You'd look behind you every now and again. That's great.
And listener, we appreciate you following us on social media. We appreciate the reviews and letting us walk through this crazy time with you together as we're all figuring it out. So I'd like to point out, every everything we say is not necessarily right either, and we're just going to try to be thoughtful.
We don't have sponsors to offend. That's what's great.
That's right. We do have patrons, okay, though.
That's true.
And we hope we don't offend you. So
we appreciate you.
Yeah, you guys can go check out our Patreon account at our website, Johnny, which is at
talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
So go check that out. Share it. Let your friends and family know about, hopefully, just, thoughtful, fun conversations happening, even in the middle of, like you said, all the crazy things in this world. Because we can still be thoughtful, have fun, trust the Lord, and be wise, even when things are difficult around us. This is when all those things hold. So, and we're going to enjoy life and do it together. So, Johnny, I hope you break down again soon so I can come rescue you.
Oh, it's the best.
It'd be great.
Just felt, you just...
Free breakfast.
You just swaddled me in your strong arms.
I was like, it's going to be okay, Johnny.
You really did.
Actually, I couldn't hear anything at all.
He didn't swaddle me. He just gave me some gas and then I took off.
That's right. So, hey, guys, we're going to take off. So we'll see you next time on
Talk About That.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? I mean, you are called by God, and aren't we all praying the big prayer, "Here I am, Lord, send me"? So if we put two and two together, you've got a message to deliver, my friend. Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, art to make, or businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. I use my mic like a machete, so if you don't like to get your toes stepped on or pushed off cliffs to finally jump on in with Jesus, I may be too much for you. But if you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform or lifeaudio.com today.